thank you, Scott. We're now going to go ahead and start the Q&A session. Scott, I think we have two questions for you, and I'm just going to actually maybe three questions there. So I think we're just going to start with those since you just finished and it's fresh in everybody's mind. I guess the question is, how do haulers obtain oversized, overweight permits 24/7 in Missouri?
We actually have a on-call 24/7 permit agent. They literally have a rotation. They share the department cell phone. They also take their laptop home with them, and we provide them with ways to log on. And every weigh station in Missouri has that number. Almost all of our carriers have that number. And unfortunately, two or three times a night, our 24/7 permit person that's on call gets a call about why did you route this person this way? They're, hitting the mastheads on a railroad crossing. But we just pretty much make it a policy that we're available to our carriers and to our roadside enforcement 24/7.
All right. And is the impact of oversized overweight loads greater on flexible pavement than on rigid pavement?
Are you sure that's a question for me?
Well, maybe that's actually more for Jack. Jack, if you want to go ahead and answer that one then.
Well, yeah, on the one slide that I showed there, and I'm not an engineer, I'm a planner, but I can try to address that. You know, like the impact of an easement is calculated differently on flexible pavements than it is on concrete pavements, for example. And so when that number of ease holes that a roadway is designed for is designed for a certain number of ease holes, then that calculation of the weight by those axle loadings relates to either flexible or rigid pavement. So it's calculated different, but the impact in essence is the same. It's just calculated differently, and you have a different bank account, if you would, of life in a concrete pavement than you would in a flexible pavement.
All right, thank you. What I'm going to do now, actually, is I'm going to go back up. We'll just start at the top now. So we'll start with questions for Raimundo and just keep going down. Let's see here. Raimundo, who did the hauling for the OSOW load that was displayed on the picture on the cover of your slide?
That was actually done by Intermountain Rigging and Heavy Haul out of Salt Lake City.
Okay. And does Idaho have electronic credentialing capability?
We do. We actually have a site where customers can obtain their own permits, but they're only for annual permits. And we do have an annual overweight oversized. It does not allow them to obtain a permit for vehicles of that size that you saw on that first slide. It's an envelope vehicle, allows them 15'6" high, 14'6" wide, and 110 feet in long, and then your weight is dependent on your axle spacings. So there is a way that they can get a permit, but it does not cover for those loads that exceed that envelope vehicle dimensions.
Okay. Are the open houses a requirement, or are they good business practices?
There is nothing in code or administrative law that says that we have to have an open house for the movement of oversized and overweight loads. In this case, it was a good business practice, and actually Imperial Oil had contacted us. When they contacted us early on wanting to make a move of this size, they had already incorporated into there that they wanted to put on an open house so they could assure the citizens that the move could be done safely and efficiently. But there is no requirement that it has to be done.
Okay. And is there an online option for the permitting process?
Yes, as I stated before, but it's only for annual permits. Single trip permits have to be done through our centralized permit office.
Okay. What principles does ITD use to determine permit fees?
Well, there is an administrative cost associated with the issuance of each permit, and we do a cost study every year to determine what that fee should be, and that takes into account all of the administrative functions that we do in issuing those permits, as well as the salaries of the people who actually issue the permit, the maintenance engineers that we ask to spend time on them, the bridge section, our enforcement personnel, So the administrative cost is covered that way. As far as the weight portion of the permit, there is a road use fee that they must pay, and those fees are based on the number of axles on the vehicle, as well as the total gross weight. And it is a sliding scale, so it can get a little bit pricey, but typically we're, if you survey the states around us, we're probably in the middle when it comes to road use fees for these type of movements.
All right. And where did the large trucks park at the end of the day? Was there large parking somewhere?
There was large parking somewhere. They actually, as part of the plan, they had to designate those locations where they were going to reach, where there was ample room for them to actually park on the side of the road to allow traffic, two-way traffic, to actually use that roadway for their business.
Okay. Were you able to recoup the true cost of the heavy load example, the drums, through Idaho's existing permitting fee structure?
I believe we did. You know, the thing about the road use fees and the administrative fees, they are set in Idaho code, so that those are fees that we have to follow and maintain. But based on the amount of time we spent on it, I believe we did. One of the things that the concerned citizens was they seemed to think that when they approached us in 2008, that's all we did. We worked on nothing but these movements. But that's not the way it works. We work on them a little bit here, a little bit there. Those costs are all determined by the cost study. And, of course, the road use fees are already set in Idaho code. So I feel that we did get the true cost of it.
Okay. You mentioned that you have a centralized permit office of OWOL loads, even though the presentation was only on state highways. Does this central office handle those loads if they also went on city streets or country-owned or county-owned roads?
No, our centralized permit office only issues permits. Well, and I'll quantify it here at the end. We only issue permits for one county. One county has come into agreement with us to allow us to issue their permits, but otherwise, the permits that we issue are strictly for state highways and the interstate and that one county. The other counties, they have not come into agreement with us, so therefore they are responsible for issuing those permits for their city and county roads under their jurisdiction.
Okay. Are Idaho's overload permit fees adequate to cover administrative costs and wear and tear on the roadways?
Yeah, I believe they are, yes.
All right. Well, thank you, Raimundo. We'll now move on to some questions for Jack. Jack, the first question for you is, with respect to the increase in rig weights from the 1990s, have ESALs also increased?
The only way I can answer that, I guess, intuitively, is to say they probably have, but we didn't go back and look at the configurations and the weights of equipment used in the oil industry in 1990. We looked at them from this point on. What are the current impacts? So, We didn't actually go back and historically look, but you know, I guess just intuitively I would guess because of the equipment being so much larger, I would anticipate that there has been some increase. For example, that rig that you mentioned, a lot of those used to be have one less axle on them, so the weights were lower, but as they got to be higher, they had an axle. So that would have to be computed, but we've not done that.
All right. Are there instances in North Dakota when anticipating significant oversized overweight movements, the North Dakota DOT builds roads to a higher specification to accommodate them?
I guess that was the whole idea behind this. We wanted to know, given the number of wells that would be located in a particular area, where that traffic would go to what segment of roadway. We wanted to be able to compute what that additional diesel factor would be for those segments. And so now that we have that information, in addition to the normal growth rate that was out there in traffic before, and we count, for example, in our oil production area every year right now to get an idea of how those traffic counts are changing, they can take that baseline figure, look at the normal growth, and then apply the oil bubble for the number of wells in a particular area into the design of the roadway.
All right. Does the North Dakota DOT have problems with rutting during the spring thaw?
I think that answer is yes. I think everybody does. You know, one of the things about the oil industry, they move a lot of those materials any time of the year. They're willing to pay overload fees and things like that because the cost and the cost of doing business there, it's just unbelievable. So they'll make those movements, pay the fees if they can. And in some cases, yeah, since we have a lot of flexible pavements, there's a lot of rutting in some of the roadways. And so that's a constant challenge to try to deal with that.
Okay. Has North Dakota devised a revenue recovery technique that would allocate the cost of accelerated maintenance costs to the oil industry?
Not directly to, say, the, you know, each individual movement, where we can say, you know, a movement of this piece of equipment cost this much to recover the cost. But what happened during our last legislative session, our legislature appropriated $226.8 million for state highways in the oil production area and $142 million for county and township roads in the oil production area. Those dollars came out of the general funds, which I think were then put into the general fund from an extraction tax on the oil industry. So indirectly, the oil industry helped pay for the impacts of the roadways, not directly to any one movement.
All right. Has North Dakota instituted a traffic count program to verify the traffic projections that you developed?
That's a good question. I think we can, what we're trying to do again is count every year in those areas to find out how the traffic is changing and use of ATRs and so forth to get some classification of the vehicles to see how that's changing. What we are doing right now is working with Upper Great Plains Transportation Institute at North Dakota State University to develop a traffic model for western North Dakota that would then capture these movements, look at the timing of them based on the how the wells would be developed in relation to their leasing patterns, and then is saying, okay, the drilling in these segments, there were so many wells drilled here, here's the leasing pattern, that should have created this much additional truck traffic. How does that compare then to the truck counts that were in that area? So we haven't done it specifically yet, but we're moving in that direction.
All right. Jack, I'll put this to you first, but Raimundo or Scott, you may want to be able to answer it as, or might be able to answer it as well. When setting fees for oversized, overweight movements, do DOTs also consider the additional costs imposed by resource industries with additional volumes of highway-sized traffic?
Well, you know, that's a, I think that's an area where there's still a lot of evolution occurring there. And if you do that for one industry, you have to do it for all, to be fair. So if you do it for the oil industry, are there large movements associated, say, with the agriculture industry or the forestry industry or any other industry you may have? So I think that's an area right now that has been primarily addressed through registration fees. The larger vehicles pay higher registration fees and so forth. But to answer it directly, I don't think that we currently have a system that maybe fully allocates or those costs to the industries.
All right.
I'm going to agree with Jack. That was a great answer.
Okay. And Scott, anything to add?
What he said.
All right. Jack, another one for you. Do you have wind farm installations with large windmill components requiring OS permits? If so, how many?
Yeah, we have, I think there's like 1,400 and some megawatts of wind power generation in North Dakota right now, and that roughly translates to about 1,400 towers. They're about a megawatt each. Each one of those towers takes 13 to 15 loads, which I believe 11 of them require oversized or overweight permits because of the nature of the load. Some of those loads, again, are up in the range of a couple hundred thousand plus pounds. So what we find there, most of that impact occurs during the construction phase. And again, it's about 13 to 15 loads per tower. But the other thing we're finding in North Dakota is that some of these components are being brought inland through the Great Lakes to Duluth, and then they're being transported across Minnesota and North Dakota to other locations for wind farms in the northern Great Plains. There's also places that make wind farm components in Colorado, and they're shipping them to Canada and things like this. So it's not just the wind farms in our state that are impacting roadways and the movements that are associated with them, but components that are going through our state are also impacting our highways.
All right. Are you sharing your analysis with local agencies that are being impacted by the additional OSOW truck traffic? Many of their roads are gravel, so have you done any analysis for gravel roads?
Yeah, certainly the information we have isn't secretive by any means, and we've made many, many presentations on it. I think the challenge that many of our local governments are having are just dealing with this, and some of them, you know, there is a, for example, in western North Dakota, I believe 17 counties are a member of the oil and gas producing permitting process, so they permit across county boundaries in western North Dakota, but those fees are primarily there to cover the administrative cost of the permit and to route the truck or the piece of equipment. I don't think that they are recouping the cost of the impacts to the roadways in most cases. With regard to gravel roads, we haven't done an analysis that says, you know, here's the diesel impact or something on a gravel road, because each of those gravel roads, and there are many of those, but if you're well familiar with North Dakota, we have basically a grid system of roadways almost every mile for most of the state. And so many of those roadways, the characteristics of how they were built vary greatly from one road to the next to the next. So to calculate the impact on the roadways is very difficult.
All right. Another question for you, Jack. When North Dakota collected traffic data, how did they know what part of the oil bubble they were in?
Well, that's where we went and looked at again, within given any one given oil production area, how many wells were currently drilled there. In that example I had, I think we showed there were 70 some wells that would be drilled in that area. There were 30-some wells currently drilled in that area, so we knew that there would be approximately 43 additional wells drilled. And so we were already into the oil bubble in that one area, partly into that oil bubble, and we knew approximately how many wells were to still be drilled and what the impact of those wells would be. And then we attributed that to the roadway segments accordingly.
Okay. I believe this is for you, Jack. Why hasn't oversized equipment going to Canada been sized to allow shipment via rail?
I'm not sure how to answer that one.
Jennifer, maybe I'll take a crack at that one.
Sure.
I think the reason, not to say that they couldn't do it, but I think in talking to Imperial Oil, they wanted these modules to be built to a certain dimension, so that way when they got to Canada, it was easy to assemble them all together to make this extraction process easier. It was a business decision on their part not to do it by rail, as well as there was a lot of other difficulties in doing so for them, and they felt it was easier just to transport them via a commercial vehicle.
There are some restrictions on the rail system, too, with regard to heights and weights and things like that, and widths and so forth. Also, that would make some main lines impractical for the movement of some oversized pieces of equipment.
Yes.
Okay, thanks. Jack, another one for you. Did North Dakota ask the fracking industry to justify operating OSOW? If so, what were the deciding point to approve?
No, there's a number of different agencies that have responsibilities or roles with regard to regulations for the oil industry and the size of that equipment is. There are decisions that are often made by the industries, and then the transportation system is asked to make those movements. They don't fit within the size and weight limitations that don't require permits, then they have to get a permit for those processes. And in some cases, they may want to move on a particular roadway, and our district engineers working with a highway patrol, for example, will deny a permit because there's a heights restriction or there's a weight restriction or a seasonal load restriction on a roadway, and they'll deny the permit. But when often and whenever possible, they'll try to permit that load movement again to support the opportunities for economic growth.
All right, thank you. We have two more questions left, so we're going to try to quickly get through those before we close out. So the next question is for Raimundo and Jack. Do you see eCells playing a more important role in the permitting process in the future as opposed to traditional weight measures?
I think that there's a place for that. I think that's a good way of determining those fees. The issue that we have here is educating our legislative folks on why there's a need to use that and also what how it would impact that current fee schedule. So I think it's a good thing to do. But as with anything, when you take something to the legislature, it also depends on how you can convince them and what that appropriate fee should be.
I would tend to agree with that. And the other thing, again, as I mentioned before, if you apply it to one industry in order to be fair and equitable, then those computations should be applied across the board to all industries so that everybody's being treated equitably. The one issue then comes sometimes when you have border traffic, like between us and Montana, then you have differential size and weight restrictions and so forth, which make it difficult for the industries to operate. If you used an ESOL equivalent, it might even out that administration a little more equitably.
All right, thank you. And one last question, this one's for Raimundo. Other than the one county that an agreement has been established with, what has been the hindrance to establishing agreements with other counties?
The agreement that we have with that one county, basically the city and the county got together, all the different entities, and said, we do want you to issue permits for our county. So it was a unified agreement with that whole county. With the other counties around the state, we have tried to get an agreement with them also, but they can't seem to get all of the city and the county to have local jurisdiction over a highway to agree on the principles that we use as far as for routing and the overweights that are allowed on highways. So we hope to get there eventually, but there is that process where we want to have the whole county and not just bits and pieces, because if you have the bits and pieces, then it becomes a nightmare trying to figure out where you can actually issue a permit.
All right, thank you. Well, we're right at the time to end, so we're going to go ahead and close out for today. Looks like we got through all the questions. So I want to thank all three presenters for three great presentations, and thank you everybody in attendance as well. The recorded version of today's webinar will be available within the next 2 to 3 weeks on the Talking Freight website, and I'll send out an email once it is available. As a reminder, if you're an AICP member and would like to receive 1.5 certification maintenance credits for attending today, please make sure you were either signed in with your first and last name, or if there was a group of people in the room with you and any of them are applying for credits, just type their name into the chat box. I encourage everybody to download the evaluation form and email it to me after you've completed it. The next seminar will be held on June 20th and will be about the Pavement Data Analysis Tool, or PaveDAT, for overweight truck permit calculation. And you can visit the Talking Freight website, the third from the bottom bullet on your screen, and register for this webinar now. I don't believe this webinar, actually, but going back to the AICP credits, I don't think it's on the AICP website yet, but I will send out an email once it is available. So with that, we'll close out. Thank you, everybody, and enjoy the rest of your day.